If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Matt DeFrance of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joined by Nathan Mills, also of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, to talk about the St. Louis Blues. And the topic at most of the front of our minds right now is goaltender interference. It's kind of popped up a few times in the last week for the Blues, most notably on Saturday night in the game against the Kraken, where the Blues allowed a goal with 1.9 seconds remaining that was reviewed by the lead for goaltender interference. Ultimately, they decided that it was no interference. The goal counted. I think we all know the rest of it. Seattle, that's the game tying goal. They score the game winning goal in overtime. The Blues go from 2 points in their back pocket to 1 point as an overtime loser. And this goaltender interference became a controversial topic around St. Louis. So, Nathan, just with that goal in particular, what was your view of it?
Man, at first I thought, oh, this is for sure goaltender interference. You know, that was my initial thought. I felt sure, just like the Blues did. And when that was not the ruling that came back, I thought, no way. So I went and I actually read the rule in the NHL rule book. Granted, I grabbed 2023, 2024, so maybe I missed an update, but read the rule, and it does seem like there is the faintest glimmer of wiggle room in there, and it feels like they chose to use that to make that call. Maybe it was an indisputable evidence thing. Maybe it was one of those, like, you know, it's already, we've ruled it a goal. There's not enough evidence to overturn here, but man, it felt slim call, I think.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that Jim Montgomery has talked about in the days after the call, that if it was called a no goal on the ice, it would have stayed no goal. If it was called goal on the ice, it would have been a goal. Just it was tight enough where obviously the lead felt one way, the Blues felt another way. And my personal view of it, I mean, there's in my mind probably three general criteria for goaltender interference, right? One, does the guy go into the crease on his own? And in this case, Eberle went in on his own. He wasn't pushed in. He wasn't shoved in. He went in willingly and he entered the crease. Number two, what did contact actually happen in the crease? And in this case, it did. His left skate caught Joel Hofer's stick blade and kind of shifted the way he moved, right? And number three, obviously, was there a goal scored? And all three of those, check, check, check. And yeah, I mean, when you look at the rule book, it seems pretty cut and dry. You know, this is rule 69.3. If an attacking player initiates contact with a goalkeeper, incidental or otherwise, while the goalkeeper is in his goal crease and a goal is scored, the goal will be disallowed. So that seems pretty straightforward, right? Like, he initiated the contact. It didn't matter if it was purposeful or incidental. It happens. The contact happens while the goalie was in the crease and a goal was scored. So to me, that was pretty straightforward. And there are exceptions to the rule, right? I mean, we talked about being pushed in, and that is an exception. I think if we're going to talk about more goaltender interference calls in a little bit, but
right,
the being pushed in is an exception. And there's also an exception for loose pucks or rebounds. If there's a loose puck or rebound and the player's going for the puck in the crease and makes contact with the goalie, incidental contact, like, that's allowed, but neither of those things happen. And when Jim Montgomery talked to us recently about what the league said to him, he cited rule 64 of the rule book. So this is now rule 38.2C. You got that 38.2C, Nathan, right?
Okay, thank you.
It deals with challenges for goaltender interference, and this was the relevant part that the lead cited.
Okay.
That the attacking team was the attacking player's positioning within the goal crease did not impair the goalkeeper's ability to defend his goal and, in fact, had no discernible impact on the play. That's when a goal would count. And so the lead determined that it didn't have any discernible impact on the play. And so my view of this now is that is generally, it talks about the position of a player, not the contact of a player. So to me, that doesn't even apply in my own minds. Obviously, the league has their view of it. But to me, that's where I see it. And I'm like, well, that seems to be saying, hey, you're taking up crease, taking up space in the crease. And then you impair the goalie's ability to play. But that wasn't the case. He was in the crease and he made contact. So I didn't really grasp the full ruling from the league even after a few days. And, you know, right now, I think the Blues had a good response to it, obviously, with a winning over Calgary on Tuesday night. But when
featured a goaltender interference. Yeah, goal, by the way,
a couple of them. Yeah, a couple of them. So they had a good response. But when we look at the end of the season and you're trying to stack up points because this team's going to need every single point that they can get now.
Yeah.
Is that one point going to be costly? I don't know.
It could be, you know, especially when you get down to the heat of a playoff race. How many times have we seen, you know, the end of a season, a playoff race comes down to a point, you know, or less in some cases. Right. Man, that one's tough. And it, you know, it kind of calls back to, you know, the timing of it and the kind of, I don't know if this is the word, like the heartbreakiness of it. Right. Called back to that. Yeah. That playoff loss, and it felt kind of devastating, but it was nice to see them bounce back against Calgary with a couple of more goaltender interference calls and a win.
Right. Yeah. And like, yeah, I think that was the first thought on a lot of people's minds was that Winnipeg game seven, when Chandler Stephenson scores that game tying goal late, because you look up at the clock and it says 0.5 seconds and it just harkened back to what they went through in Winnipeg. And, you know, obviously they did add more time to it. It ended up being 1.9 seconds on the clock when the goal was officially counted. But that was, that had to be at the forefront of a lot of people's minds. And also like just the 6-on-5 struggles in general, that was something that they dealt with a lot last year. Like they were, they had to, it wasn't just the Winnipeg series. It wasn't just game seven. It was a lot in the last, especially I think the last 4 months of the season. I think across the entire season, the Blues are the only team in the league that was outscored facing an empty net. Every other team scored more empty net goals and they allowed extra attacker goals, and the Blues are the only team that didn't. So I'm sure that had the ghosts woke up little bit there.
I think so. And it was one of the things that Montgomery talked about shortly after that game as well. You know, listen, if we score in the 2.5 minutes we've got an empty net, it doesn't matter. That goaltender interference call doesn't kill us. And we didn't take advantage of the opportunity that was laid in front of us, you know, to create a situation where we didn't have to worry about that. So, you know, I think that, it's compounding struggles, right? And then you put yourself into a situation where you put it in the referee's hands, and they put themselves in a bad situation and with that sort of play and couldn't get themselves out.
Yeah, I mean, there are three chances to put the game away, right? I mean, Joel Hofer, I would love to see a goalie goal. But he goes for it. He misses wide, so that goes down as an icing. Robert Thomas misses from just inside the red line, I think, or just on the other side of the red line. Nick Bjugstad goes for it. It's deflected by Vince Dunn. And, you know, that's a play that it's kind of weird to think about it in the past. But, you know, the officials blew that down for icing because they didn't realize that it got tipped. And then they discussed amongst each other and realized it got tipped. And so then the faceoff came to center ice. But if that calls and made, that clock keeps going, right? And what happens then if they don't stop play, and if there's no inadvertent whistle, if they don't have to have another face off, like kind of a small little butterfly effect in a way. But yeah, I mean, let's get to the two more goaltender interference calls from this Flames game on Tuesday. So Both of them involve Nathan Walker, unsurprisingly, the way that he plays. First one, he scores. It's a high flip pass from Oscar Sundquist. Lands pretty well for Alexei Toropchenko on the rush. His first shot is stopped by Dustin Wolf. And as Nathan Walker is crashing the net, he kind of takes Joel Hanley into Wolf. The puck is never covered by Wolf fully, kind of squirts in between his legs. Walker picks it out, backhand into the net. The Flames discussed this, at least. You could see there was a little delay on the bench, whether to challenge it or not. They're down 3-0. They really didn't have much to lose. And if I may read from the rule book again, if a defending player has been pushed, shoved, or fouled by an attacking player so as to cause the defending player to come into contact with his own goalkeeper, such contact shall be deemed contact initiated by the attacking player, and for the purposes of this rule, a goal will be disallowed. So that seems like it could have been called back there. And obviously the Flames never challenged. The Blues goal counted. It ends up being the game-winning goal. And after the game, you know, I was, you know, we talked to Nathan Walker, and he's like, yeah, I mean, luckily that went for us. And so I think there was maybe some thought that, I don't know if it's quite karma, but that was a play where you could very easily have seen it go the other way, where goal interference is called and a Blues goal gets taken off the board.
Yeah, people listening to this are going to think we're real nerds just quoting the rule book over and over and over.
You got to be right.
This is what the rules say, guys. I think it's we've talked a lot this season about the Blues not getting any bounces, right? Everything kind of not going their way. This felt like an instance of something finally going their way. I'll tell you, it kind of felt like, okay, here we go. You know, luck is starting to turn. Here we go. You know, it's not going to feel like, you know, you're losing all of these chance things in hockey. And then you allow 2 goals in 25 seconds, and I was scared again. But it kind of felt like the universe correcting itself a little bit, correcting course on what the first part of the season has looked like so far.
Yeah, and even that one in the third period, I think that one was kind of obvious that it was interference. I mean, Walker's stick goes right into the pad of Wolf. The puck ends up in the net, but it was pretty clear he shoved the goalie in the net. Like, that's
on the FanDuel broadcast, they showed a video of him, you know, looking up and watching the screen and seeing it and going, you know, like, yeah, okay, yeah, hey, you they got me, you know.
So. Yeah, and I think the Blues thought about challenging the call, but the way that Jim Montgomery described it says it wasn't dead wrong. And in that instance, right, it's a 3-2 game. If you challenge and you're right, you go 4-2. You challenge and you're wrong, it's still 3-2, and the Flames have a power play, a chance to tie the game. So the, you know, it wasn't dead wrong is a high standard to meet for a team that's trying to protect a 1-goal lead. So I can understand why they didn't end up challenging that or end up going that direction. So, you know, it could have been a second goal of the evening for Matthew Kessel. I think that would have probably ended up being his goal, since he had a wraparound and then a Flames defenseman hit in the net. So it would have been his second goal of the evening. He scored in the first period, and he's kind of grabbed a little bit more responsibility now on that third pairing with Tyler Tucker. He's getting a lot more playing time, and right now he's going to be getting some playing time because the Blues sent down Logan Mailloux to Springfield. So he's in the AHL now. When we talked to Doug Armstrong, he said it's a reset. He needs to kind of play a little bit more free. He's locked up here. Seems that whenever there is a mistake, it goes poorly for Mailloux. And they want him to kind of become a confident player again and bring that back up to the NHL. It is only for a finite time. He mentioned to you, he was pretty clear about that. This is not an indefinite time period to send down to the AHL, and then we'll just see what happens after that. They have a plan for him to be down there for X amount of games. Armstrong would not say the exact amount, but this is kind of a reset for Logan Mailloux now.
That was a really smooth transition, I just want you to know, from the goaltender interference.
I worked hard on that.
I knew that you did. I knew that you sat down and thought about it. Yeah, this, you know, listen, I'm really rooting for him for a couple of reasons, primarily because this is he has a skill set that's really coveted in the NHL, and I think that's why the Blues paid the price that they did to get him. But the fact is, in the, 11 games he played, or maybe not even that many, he just looked like he wasn't ready for the speed of the game. He almost looked like he was surprised by it at times, honestly. And so getting back down to the NHL, or the NHL, the AHL, and, you know, getting some confidence back, and honestly, getting some more time on the ice. You know, I mean, he wasn't getting, he needs time to improve, but he's not getting enough time to improve. So you can get a little bit of that back at the AHL, and I think that's going to be good for him. Yeah.
Yeah. And our guest later on in this episode is Springfield head coach Steve Konowalczuk. And when we talked to him earlier this week, one of the topics of conversation was Logan Mailloux and how he envisions using him. He said that he would have him with Michael Buchinger, getting a ton of minutes, playing power play, all that stuff. And, you know, the AHL doesn't release ice time figures, but if they did, I would imagine Mayu's going to probably end up in the 20 to 22 minute range instead of the 12 and a half that he was averaging in St. Louis in his nine games. And in those nine games, the Blues were outscored 13-1 when he was on the ice. So, like, some of that is the goalies were making like 75% of the saves or something like that. Like, that's, he can't play goal too, but a lot of it too was some needless turnovers behind the net, some errors exiting the zone, just things in his own zone that need to be cleaned up. I mean, there was a play in Washington when it would be a hand pass. Washington kind of bats the puck. It would be a hand pass. He ends up playing it. It goes right to, I believe it was Beauvillier, and Beauvillier scores. Like, that's a play where if you don't touch it, the worst that happens is a face-off because of a hand pass. But you touch it, it goes right to the player, and then ends up in the back of the net. So that's a mistake that, yeah, you shouldn't be making, but is it a bad enough mistake to end up in the back of the net all the time? No. Sometimes you need to save for the goal. So the numbers and the plus-minus look a lot worse than maybe they should, but that doesn't mean that he's been playing well. Obviously, I think we all can see the struggles.
No, I agree with that, but and I hadn't considered it, but that's a good point about the goaltending and kind of not being there to, not just Mailloux, everybody really, but not being there to back up these guys. I imagine that's hard on your confidence when you're making mistakes and those are becoming goals more often than they're not, you know, or at least than they would have been in a normal situation. So now that the goaltending is starting to stabilize, at least it looks like it's starting to stabilize, I wonder if once he comes back after however many games, getting some of those stops, if that might help with his confidence, let him play a little more freely, a little less in his head, I guess, would maybe be the way to say that.
Right. So, yeah, I just looked it up right now. So at 5-on-5, Logan Mailloux, when he's on the ice, the Blues have a 6.977 save percentage. So that's under 70%. And for context, right, this is according to Natural Stat Trick, there have been 743 skaters that have played in the NHL this season, at least one shift, right? That's the second worst save percentage. So Mayu's had some bad luck. That's very clear. And honestly, the worst save percentage is when Brendan Othman with the Rangers on the ice, and he's played one game all year, 12 and a half minutes. So if we're looking at regular-ish players, Mayu's had the worst goaltending in the league behind him. So the numbers look worse than they actually are, but as we mentioned before, he's not playing well, too. This isn't an instance where he's playing well and it's just bad luck. He's playing poorly, and the bad luck is kind of amplifying that. So
yeah, compounding mistakes. Yeah,
right. So we'll see when he gets back up, and how he looks in the NHL during his stint down there. Obviously, we talked a little bit last week about Springfield getting Milan Lucic there too. So they have a couple of key storylines for a Blues perspective to follow down there, and what happens with Lucic, how he returns from his groin injury, how Logan Mailloux ends up kind of rebounding from a poor stint in the NHL. And, you know, when we talked about rebounding, here's another segue for you, Nathan.
Oh, it's so good. I knew it was coming.
Oh, yeah. We talked about rebounding. There have been three Blues players in the past week that have been healthy scratched, come back, and had a great game. First, it was Matthew Joseph, healthy scratch in Washington. Nets game, Buffalo, boom, 3 points. Jordan Kyrou, healthy scratched in Buffalo. Nets game, scores a goal in the third period. That would have been the game-winning goal if not for the goaltender interference stuff at the end of the Seattle game. Oscar Sundquist, healthy scratch for two games in Buffalo and against Seattle. Comes back against Calgary, has two assists, is part of a fourth line that was really entrusted to hold the lead at the end of the game. I think in the last 5 minutes, they played about half of the ice time. So like they were out there in crunch time. So you look at those three guys, Matthew Joseph, Jordan Kyrou, Oscar Sundquist, all getting responses after being healthy scratched.
Yeah, so I'm starting to think we should start healthy scratching everybody.
Everybody, huh? Just rotate it through the whole team. Huh?
Yeah, I might healthy scratch myself a couple of times just so I can be more productive at work. You know what I mean? It seems like it works. And we talked last episode about Montgomery being willing to do things like that and sort of set an example that way. And that's one of the things that I really like about him as a coach, and it seems to work. We talked a little bit last time about Thomas doing the same last year. And you know, the proof is in the pudding, right? We've got Joseph bounce back, Kyrou bounce back, Sonny bounce back. And the Sonny bounce back might be the biggest of them all, to me, not just because I love Sonny, but because, you know, when you see a glue guy like that take that, that's a great example for the rest of your team going, okay, this is, you know, this is the way you respond to that kind of adversity. And so I think there, it feels like a very good sign, not only that this is working, but that culturally this is a thing that is sustainable to do, you know, a couple of times and still see success from it.
Yeah, I do think the Sundquist one is big, but I would tend to disagree. I think the Kyrou, if they can get him going, that changes the outlook. Because even this Calgary game on Tuesday, you got a goal from a power play tip, Dylan Holloway, great tip, great deflection. But outside that, it's a fourth line forward and Nathan Walker and a third pair defenseman in Matthew Kessel. You're not getting goals from the top guys when you're looking at Buchnevich, Thomas, Kyrou. And to see Kyrou come back in that Seattle game and in the first period, it was pretty apparent too. I mean, there was a gift. Ryan Winterton did serve up a nice hot pizza for Dylan Holloway right in the slot for him to bury. But it was Jordan Kyrou with the pressure there that may or may not have forced the turnover, but at least he was there, right? He was there on the forecheck causing a little bit of chaos, right? And then he blocks a Vince Dunn shot, and in chasing it down, he draws a penalty. So those are two things in the first period where you look at him and he doesn't have the puck, right? He's pressuring on a forecheck, he's blocking a shot, he's chasing one down, and he's drawn a penalty. But you're seeing some signs that the effort, the competitiveness, the other things besides scoring are there. And it ends up just being that he does score in the third period, a big goal at the time. And so I think that obviously they need these guys to get going. Pavel Buchnevich has, I think, one secondary assist in his last nine games, I believe.
Yeah, he's a guy I was going to say could maybe use a healthy scratch here, see if we can get him going, yeah.
Yeah, so the one thing that I would think about with Buchnevich is I was watching like who's on the ice at the end of the game last night too, right? So we talked about Sundquist, Walker, Torpchenko, and a lot of it was Thomas, Buchnevich, and Suter. Like those were three guys that they trusted defensively to shut down and close out a one-goal game. And some of the plays that Buchnevich was able to make with his stick or just getting a chip out of the zone, like, they still matter to the coaching staff in general and the way that they use him on the penalty kill. Like, it seems like there's a lot of other ways that Buchnevich can affect the game. Now, that's all fine and dandy, but he's their third highest paid player now,
yep,
behind Thomas and Kyrou. His new contract kicked in this year, and he's making $8 million on average. So this is a deal where they don't need the money to be for defensive responsibility. They need the money to be for offensive production. And so he does a lot of good things And I think early on we talked about him that he was around the puck, he was around the chances at the net front. He was kind of flubbing them, but you trusted that at some point he was a good, too good of a player to miss those ones. And lately you haven't really seen a ton of those chances that you were seeing early on around the crease. But you do still see the defensive responsibility that Jim Montgomery kind of values. And honestly, I think the one thing that I like to think about a lot is, you know, coaches lie, players lie, ice time never lies. The ice time tells a story. Yep. And when you look at Buchnevich in the Seattle game, I believe that he played, it was like 14 and a half minutes. Like this is a player who's usually around 18, 19. And last night he was 19 and a half. So I think in that Seattle game, there was not so much of a message being sent. He wasn't benched, but it just wasn't the regular usage, probably because of what he's shown in the previous games.
Yeah, we've seen that a couple of times with guys where it's not an outright benching or a healthy scratch. I mean, there have been a game or two where Thomas has, you know, not played for most of a period.
Yeah, that happened in Buffalo. I think the second half of the second period is like 9 minutes or something. Yeah,
like nine and a half minutes, and we've seen that with a handful of guys, not including the goalies who have had their own issues, of course. But you know, I don't know. You know, sometimes it feels like when a guy sees his ice time dip, he doesn't. There are no changes that come after that, and I kind of felt like last night watching Buchnevich, I didn't see anything different last night versus. You know, in previous games, you know, whereas you look at a healthy scratch situation, and of course, all three of these we're talking about here have worked out well. You know, maybe he needs a little bit of a reset, not just a diminished time on ice, but an actual take a break here and come back at it next game.
So, as I mentioned earlier, our guest this week is Springfield head coach Steve Konowalczuk, and they got some newsy items, right? We talked about Lucic, we talked about Mayu, and those are both topics that we covered with Konowalczuk. Also talked about Theo Lindstein's adjustments to the AHL in his rookie season in North America. Otto Stenberg's kind of half to a slow start. Springfield in general, they've had a rough go. They're 1-8, 1-1 this season. They got one win in 11 games. So they're having a rough time. And part of it is the goaltending is not the same scenario that they expected, just with losing Colton Ellis. Like you're supposed to be Colton Ellis as the starter, as being one of the best starters in the AHL. Obviously, he's not there anymore, so that means Vadim Zarenko becomes the starter. The Blues signed Georgi Romanov. He gets hurt on a play where someone clips his skate in the crease. His leg kind of gets caught out, and so he hasn't played recently. So they do have some issues in the net. Will Cranley got brought up. It's not that the goalies have been bad. I think Zarenko has actually been pretty decent, but it's just not the goaltending that they expected to have. And then I believe the power play has had some really rough nights for Springfield, with a lot of opportunities and not scoring a lot. They had a 2-for-9 one night. They had an 0-for-7. They had an 0-for-8 in there. So they've had a lot of chances. I think their power play right now is at 17.3%. So not where you want it to be. And Springfield, you know, it's always a weird thing. You want your AHL team to be good because you don't want those guys in a bad environment. But above all, you want them to develop. And a lot of times people will say, well, winning is development. So we'll see if they can get it turned around. But Nathan, I mean, just your overall thoughts on, you know, maybe what you've seen or not seen, or what you thought about the conversation with Steve Konowalczuk.
Yeah. So the thing about the AHL is we don't get enough coverage of it. And that's not your fault, right? But I don't have it on TV here. I don't have it, you know, in any streaming package or anything like that. So it is nice to get some insight from him about how things are going, especially because there are a couple of guys, to your point, like, and granted, they've already been here, but Lucic, Mayu, who may, you know, factor into things for the Blues this season. So yeah, it's insightful stuff. And you know, it's, frankly, I would love to talk to him more, just so we can get a better sense of what's going on in the minors. You know, I'm more of a baseball guy, so I like the prospects. I like the minor leagues, and I wish I could get more of that easily with the AHL.
Yeah. So that'll do it for Nathan and I at the NetFront here. Stay tuned for our interview with Springfield head coach Steve Konowalczyk. And we're pleased to be joined by Springfield head coach Steve Konowalczyk. Steve, welcome. How you doing?
Good. Good. Thanks. How are you?
Good. Good. Yeah. So, obviously not the start of the season that you would have liked so far. But what have you thought overall the way that your team has played?
Well, it's certainly been frustrating with some good stretches or good periods of games that you show how we can be a better team and get better results as a team. There's been some good hockey mixed in there, but there's also been just so much inconsistency that we want to tighten up. And you have to play shift to shift, and you can't take shifts off or games off or periods off, and more consistent to give yourself a chance to win consistently.
Yeah, and you guys have had a lot of injuries. You guys have had some recalls. I think the goaltending situation is a little bit different than you would have probably anticipated at the start of the season. It seems like a lot of moving parts so far.
Yeah, I think early, definitely a different team than we had early on. But we certainly don't want to make that excuse here. We have enough depth that the guys that can get in there that go out and take advantage of the opportunity, and that's what we want to preach. But there's always going to be change in the American League level, and you have to adapt and find a ways to get the job done. And individually, it's opportunity. Guys that want to play in the NHL want to get the chance and step up and show they can be top players at this level.
All right, let's start with a couple of guys that are no longer with you but are in St. Louis. So that'd be Dalibor Dvorsky and Hunter Skinner. Obviously, Skinner just got recalled earlier this week, and Dvorsky's been up here for a little bit of time. With Dvorsky in particular, obviously you had him all of last year. You saw him in the prospect tournament, training camp, and a few games this season. What kind of steps did he make in his limited time in the AHL this year that kind of puts him on path to be an NHL contributor right now?
Well, the improvement defensively without the puck is certainly built throughout the early part of the season with us. We talk consistency, and I think early on, as our team, it wasn't quite as consistent as he needed to be. But I'll tell you what, the last couple of weeks and last few games he was with us, you could see his confidence getting to a new level. The battle level at practices also carried into the games, and he just totally you could see it, just felt he was ready, shooting the puck and skating with puck through practice and, the intensity with his skating. So it was exciting to see, because there certainly was a good confidence growth in him throughout the first part of the season with us.
Is that one of the first indicators as a coach when you see the practice intensity start to translate into game intensity for a young guy?
Well, it's certainly part of it, right? If you're practicing well and you're doing good things in practice, you're starting to, I want to say, take over a little bit of practice, that's gonna translate to your games, and it all builds confidence, and that's when you're ready to go to the next level. When you're doing that both during the games at times and through practices, that's when you're ready for the next level.
Have you mentally kind of already said like I'm probably not getting back this year?
Pardon me?
You mentally said I'm probably not getting him back?
Yeah, I mean, he certainly has done well getting the call up, so I don't expect him back again. I coach who I got here. Yeah, once they get called up, all right, good luck. I wish him the best. Hopefully I don't see him unless I bump into him down the road. But yeah, certainly want him to succeed when they get called up.
Yeah, and Skinner, I think obviously the first seven or so games playing with Lindstein, and then the last few kind of shifting around, but St. Louis has talked about how much they liked him during training camp. What did he kind of show you during his 11 games?
Well, his physical ability is certainly there. The skating and strength and skill in the hands. So he has a physical ability. Again, similar to Devo, his last couple games I thought were his best of the year. So he should be feeling confident getting called up. He definitely has the physical tools to go up there and skate with the guys up there, move the puck with those guys up there, and then be big and strong enough in front of the net to give some grit and determination in front. And so, yeah, again, I really liked his last couple of games. Good all-rounded play. He can skate the puck out of trouble when he needs to as well. And, he should be going up there pretty confident.
Yeah, and we just actually talked to him today, and some of the conversation that we had with him was, you know, what kind of work did he do over summer? What did he do? And he said he did a lot of video work with his guy in Detroit, and he would look at a lot of Jacob Chychrun, a lot of Cam Fowler, a lot of Colton Parayko, seeing their sit positioning, their body positioning, like just the way that they skated the puck out of the zones. Like, were those details that you saw coming on maybe a little bit more this year than previous years?
Certainly it, certainly more often than not, right? I think, you know, for any young player, you want to see the good habits take over and be more and more of just the way they play it, you know, and then certainly he came in and he's been more consistent with that and built in that area for sure.
Yeah. And then obviously when you don't have those two guys anymore, you have new guys that are, I think, of interest to St. Louis fans. Milan Lucic with you on a professional tryout, and then Logan Mailloux just out to you guys this week. So obviously hasn't played a game for you guys yet, but what do you anticipate with Mailloux, and how do you want to use him to kind of get him back to where the point that St. Louis wants him?
Well, he's going to play in all situations. You know, he should be a top level player here. You know, I find it's a little bit similar to last year. We had Tucker down with us. We had Kessel with us. They came down and worked hard. They got a lot of minutes in all situations. We're huge anchors on our team on the back end. And then when they got called up, they went on to have some success and stay up there. So I think it's a very similar situation. Get him in here, get him playing some minutes. You know, he hasn't played a lot of minutes up there. And also, you don't get a lot of practice time in the NHL with all the games. So I think for him, it's just getting some more reps at his game, whether it's practice and then into the games to get ready again.
Yeah, and I think you saw a little bit of him, you know, last year when he was with Laval. You know, what do you remember seeing at the AHL level, how he can, you know, control a game, I guess, so to speak?
Yeah, he certainly can skate and move the puck and shoot the puck. And, you know, Laval likes to play a similar game to the Blues, where they want to generate a lot from the back end. And, you know, we encourage that as well. So he should be able to add to us in that area. He's a good skater, good skill, good puck mover. And, you know, it'll be fun to have him part of us here for a bit.
Yeah. Who do you see him partnered with right now?
We're going to put him tomorrow with Butchinger. In a couple days, but, you know, a young kid who's actually had to come off and played a real couple good strong games here. And, you know, but that's what it looks like to start. But obviously the game dictates who's out there, and it could change. But for starters, that's who we'll pair him up with.
Right. And with Lucic, I mean, he played one of the two games over the weekend on that Friday night. What did you make of his first ever AHL game?
Well, he's a smart hockey player, right? There's a reason he played so much in the NHL. I mean, there's several, but one of them, you know, the hockey sense in the NHL is such a separating factor for a lot of players in the American League. And, you know, whether it's just, you know, reading the play without the puck, his reads are real good, where to go positionally, you know, and then you get into with the puck, with what he does with the puck, whether it's making the right play or putting the puck in the right area. You know, he has a hockey sense to do that. And then also just knowing the game and his leadership was, you know, it's pretty nice to have on that bench the way he, you know, he talks, but he talks for the team. It's not about himself. It's, you know, it's just good stuff and good information to help the team. And, you know, so that's a great experience for our guys as well.
It was strange seeing him in a visor.
I suppose so.
Yeah. Now with, I guess, was that a planned day off on Saturday? I'm guessing coming back from the injury or?
Yeah, just to come back from injury, you don't want to overdo it early, you know, get him into some game action and go from there, but certainly don't want to overdo it right off the hop with coming off injury.
Yeah. And I think when we spoke to him during the preseason about which parts of the game were going to be kind of toughest to come back to him after, you know, almost 2 years away from the sport, he said it was exiting the zone, winning wall battles along in the D zone, holding off a pinching defenseman and exiting the zone, kind of getting up to that game speed. And I think he probably got some of it in the preseason, but then he gets hurt, has a month off. And, you know, from that aspect of the game, what'd you see from him on that Friday night?
Certainly I didn't see any trouble with that. You know, I didn't know that was a major focal point for him, but certainly handled the wall play fine, whether it's getting his feet moving or making that easy pass out of our end. That he looked good doing it. So that looked like if he was focused on it, it paid off.
Is the plan still to have him kind of half of the back-to-back play and half of the back-to-back sit, or is that going to be kind of a target moving forward where he can play both ends?
Yeah, a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a floating target here. You know, he'll get into the next game, and then we'll just go from there.
And then just, I believe you have a couple of injuries, I think. So your Stancil hasn't played in a while. Just what's he got going on?
Yeah, he's got an upper body that's just kind of been lingering, so we just want to make sure, you know, a young kid take care of that properly. But he's another good kid that you know, can eat some good minutes for us and play some good minutes and has some potential, so that's important. But yeah, so hopefully soon. I think we're getting a little bit closer here, not quite ready yet, but getting closer to getting him back.
You think like within the next week or so, or is it kind of longer than that?
Hard to tell, but
Sure. Yeah.
within a week, potentially within a week, I would hope. You know, best case scenario, but I think we're getting there.
Yeah. And then Romanov saw like kind of an awkward kind of collision or clipped. He got clipped in the crease there. How's he doing?
Good. He's doing good. He's getting back on the ice now, and you know, hopefully we're within a week or somewhere in that time frame. But again, tell you guys, get guys out in practice. You never know. But I hopefully that's sooner rather than later as well.
Have you learned your Russian to speak to your goalies?
We have to have one translator. We have to have one translator to help with Susiev. But certainly we got a nice mix of countrymen. So it is fun. It is fun, and you have a lot of different personalities. But it's good.
Yeah, Susiev, when I remember talking to him during development camp, and I think Karamislav was there serving as a translator for him, but I felt like he understood what was being said to him. It was the other way around that I couldn't really, but he was working on it, I think.
Yeah, he works on it, and he sometimes I think sometimes you think he understands more than he does, which is I got to be careful with, because it looks like he's taking it in, but you got to slow down. Or sometimes Zarenko is real good. I'll bring him in, and he can help translate some stuff. So even though I think he picks up some, there's still a ways to go there, and we need to be patient with his language.
Right. As far as one of the rookies you have this year, Juraj Pekarčík. I mean, I've watched a couple of the games, I haven't seen them all, but seems like he's been getting going lately. Is that fair to say, or how have you liked the progression of his game?
Yeah, I've liked this game pretty much from the start. I mean, his speed is above average, and you know, he's got strength to go with it. He's strong on the puck. He gets in their forecheck. He's one of our best guys skating and forechecking. It's very, very encouraging, and he gets in there, and he's just a young kid that, again, it's learning the importance to be consistent without the puck, and the game plan and the system and the structure without the puck. But his physical ability one-on-one is special. His work ethic is special. His compete's good. So there's a lot to like with Pekarčík as a prospect for sure.
Yeah, he's got a lot of different parts to his game, it seems, because I remember seeing him in junior last year, and obviously junior's not gonna be a lot different than for the pro game, but the way he wanted to kind of dangle around a lot of guys was pretty apparent. And he also has that physical side where I've talked to, you know, Tim Taylor before, where he likes to get inside. He wants to be around the blue paint, and you talked about his forecheck. It seems like there's a lot of different areas of his game that he can touch.
Yeah, you know, I think he has a power forward type game. He certainly, with the puck, likes taking it to the net. He's certainly on the forecheck. You know, he'll get in there. There's no hesitation. It's really nice. So the traffic, he's not worried about traffic at all. We still want to build some habits without the puck for him. You know, when you don't have it, to get inside and get on top of the paint. And I think that's more of a habit thing that a young player needs to do. But he certainly will get in there, and he will get involved in traffic.
Yeah, and then he's had a lot of change too. You know, this is, I think, I was thinking back to when he was playing in Slovakia, and then he came and played in the USHL, and then in Quebec, and then now in the AHL. It's just a lot of different steps, right? But that's just the way the development path goes sometimes.
Well, it seems like kids are moving more and more, and have more.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to change even more now with the new college rules, that teams are going to players can bounce around and move. And, you know, so that's going to be part of it. But this, you know what, he's handling this start of the season very well. This is a hard league. You know, I don't think, you know, too many young players, whether they're coming out of junior or college, understand how hard this league is. And he's handling it real well so far.
Yeah, and another guy that's a rookie with you this year is Theo Lindstein. And I think, admittedly, to at least when I spoke to him, he was talking about how much it would take to kind of get used to North American hockey. The way that he plays, you know, very poised, very patient, but it's obviously a lot quicker in North America. How has he handled the transition to the North American program?
Good, good. No, very happy with the way that he's coming along and where he started from. It is a big change. The game, especially the American League level early on, like they're coming out. If you're a defenseman, it's a pretty relentless forecheck, and not always is there someone in the right position to be able to make an outlet pass. And so you have to learn how to sometimes do some things on your own and win battles a little bit more and be able to elude a forecheck to slip the puck to some of your partner, your centerman to break it out. And that's good. And then the other areas that the American League's pretty tough and especially different from the big ice is that puck gets in the net in a hurry in the D zone. So you gotta be quick to get in front in a battle and get body position. But overall, it's been a pretty nice start for him. You can see the skill level, the skating and the hands to move the puck and the head to go with it. So it's just, you know, a matter of keep building, getting stronger, getting more, again, like we talked about with our team, more consistent at what we do.
Yeah. How much does his skating kind of help in transition? Does it help in transition, getting you guys out of your own zone and moving forward?
Well, that to me, that's his biggest strength, right? Like I think he's kind of like a Cam Fowler type player that, you know, his ability to skate. So when he's at his best, he's getting back for pucks fast, and he's able to get on the puck and get moving. And then we want him to jump in, you know, and then in the ozone, move around and dance around the blue line a little bit with that puck, because the skating to me is one of his special attributes.
And he's running the power play, right?
Correct. We've had him, you know, we've had a kind of a rotation a little bit, but he certainly ran one of the power plays for most of the year, and he's done a good job at it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. You know, I think he's more of a, you know, he certainly can run a power play. I think for him, the main focal point is, you know, for us, making sure that good first pass and joining the rush and adding to the offense, but being a good two-way puck movement defenseman.
Yeah. And obviously another 2023 first round pick is Otto Stenberg. You know, the numbers aren't there, but I think you and I have talked before about his overall game. Where have you seen his game so far this year?
Well, again, he's such a reliable guy. Sometimes he's an easy guy to, you know, easy guy to trust. You trust him and put him in different situations, all situations. That's, you know, that's a good thing. Certainly, you know, the offense will come, you know, as he gets stronger and more confident getting inside position and getting inside around the paint, the numbers will come a little bit more. But, you know, and he's had some opportunities that just haven't gone his way, or he could bury the puck and that'll come. And, you know, but he's a good kid, hardworking kid, good two-way hockey player.
Yeah. And even when he's not scoring, I mean, there's other things that he does that impact the game, right?
Well, that's absolutely. And that, whether it's penalty kill or you can play him against top lines, that's what's special for a young player. That's hard. You know, again, we're talking, you know, whether, you know, some of these other guys that come up there, they're good maybe just with the puck, or they can do some other things with the puck and they have the skill, but they have to learn how to play away from the puck. That comes naturally to him. He takes pride in it. You know, he can penalty kill top lines, 4-on-4. So that part of the game is really special for him.
Right. Yeah. Were there any other players you wanted to kind of talk about and how they're playing so far?
You know what? I think he covered the main. Like they talk about Butchinger. You know, I really like, you know, he's been in and out early in the year on D, but you know, he's taken a step in my opinion from last year, just with his compete level and being stronger in battles and keeping the game simple. So that's a nice improvement. You know, Ginger's you know, more of a veteran guy, but the energy he's brought us this year and the compete, you know, we want that compete with and without a puck to translate. He's been real good, translate to the rest of our team. So he's been good for us. Loof, again, to me, it's been consistency, but I'll tell you what, there's another guy that he can hit, and he can hit hard, and that's something special that we want to keep encouraging, and he can have a chance to grow into a defensive defenseman in the NHL, but, you know, bringing his physical play, because when he's on his game, that's a player that you don't want to play against.
Yeah, and just following up on Bouchard, I mean, I think when I think back to his year last year, I think about the fight with McGroarty, and like it was like that ended his season, right? You hurt his hand on that, or?
Yeah. If I remember correctly, he broke his hand on that. Yeah. But he stepped up and answered the bell. And he's a good competitive kid. He's a hardworking kid. You know, never a problem with him. And he wants to get better. And like I say, he was out of the lineup early, a couple games, doesn't hang his head, keeps going at it. And his last couple games, he's had an opportunity to step in and step up, and he's done that. And he's definitely had some growth from last year, which is what you want to see.
Yeah. And obviously we've talked about the pairings, they can change, but him playing with Mayhew, at least to start, it seems like a good opportunity for him to kind of build on what he's done the last couple of games.
Yeah. You know, he's earned that, right? He's got in there, he's earned it again with the game plan structure that we're trying to put out there. He's executed it. So, you know, put him with a top defenseman and, you know, see where he can go. And, you know, that should be a real nice pair that we can put out there against anybody.
Yeah. And we'll get you out of here on this one. Just looking at your team overall, what kind of signs do you see that you would like to see in games that let you know that the turnaround is coming?
Well, you know what, we start seeing some unselfish things, whether it's a, you know, last game we're stalled in our end, and instead of icing a guy, you know, Luff gets the puck and he makes sure he bears down and puts it in the right place and takes it out himself so we can get a proper change, you know, things like that. We had you know, Alexandrov, Ginger gets hit, he steps right in, sticks up for the team. Those kind of things are real good. We're seeing the block shots and things like that. And again, it's just doing those block shots and those little things consistently. But there's some unselfish things that are happening with our team that we just got to keep building on, and things will turn around.
That's right. Thanks so much, Steve, for joining us. For Nathan Mills, I'm Matt DeFrance. This was NetFront Presence.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer. First 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.